You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Check this. The NFL Podcast with Gil Alexander and Dave Kellner.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the latest edition of the NFL Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us ahead of the conference championship games this weekend. We've got the Green Bay Packers at the Atlanta Falcons and the Pittsburgh Steelers at the New England Patriots. All the betting on the William Hill website at williamhill.com. Dave Kellner here with you, joined, as always, once again by the host of the Beating the Book podcast stateside, Gil Alexander, live from San Francisco. First of all, a good morning to you, Gil.
David, good morning. Good afternoon to you. How you doing, man?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. The game between the Packers and the Cowboys last weekend, Gil, we've got to start there. It was sensational.
It was sensational, as you pointed out off air. Thank God we had it too, right? Because, and I'll even throw Pittsburgh, Kansas City into this barrel as well, even though that game was competitive, didn't mean that it was a great football game. Besides this Green Bay-Dallas game, there has been nothing competitive in the NFL playoffs in the wild card or division round. And this game almost single-handedly made up for all of that. Such an instant classic, led by, you know, a guy who, in Aaron Rodgers, you can just throw that highlight reel right up into his Hall of Fame induction montage the day that he goes into the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, after his career, because that was just spectacular.
We'll talk more about that game as the podcast progresses, Gil. I'll give you the odds for the Packers at the Falcons, which is the first of the conference championship games this weekend. And the Packers are 19-10 on the money line to win this match outright. The Falcons are 10-23. And this spread is set at 5.5 currently. The Packers plus 5.5 at 10-11. The Falcons minus 5.5 at 10-11. And the total points line is at 60.5. The under 10-11, the over, is in the market at 10-11. As you mentioned, Gil, it was easily the most exciting playoff match of the playoff series so far last weekend, with the Packers beating the Cowboys 34-31. And Mason Crosby with a couple of 50-plus yard field goals to, in the end, win that game for the Packers. I heard you talk momentarily on your podcast, Gil, about the spike, Dak Prescott's spike that left time on the clock and allowed Green Bay to come back and win that as time expired. You didn't think that was a major deal as far as the matchup was concerned in the end, Gil?
Well, here's my take on that. What Dave is referring to is that with 47 seconds left in the game and the Cowboys driving down 31-28 at that point in the game, and then the Cowboys quickly were driving downfield, they had one timeout still left in their pocket. Clock was moving. Things were a bit frenetic. Things were a bit harried. And Dak Prescott elected to spike the ball to stop the clock to make it 2nd and 10 at, I guess, was the 40-yard line of the Packers at that moment. And at the moment that he did spike the ball, I'd be lying to you if I said a little something in my head didn't say, huh, that's an interesting choice, because now essentially you have artificially made yourself have to go 10 yards now in two plays. And so you have instead of, you know, this carefree march down the field for the Cowboys, you've now changed the dynamic instantly instead of using the timeout. But, you know, in that moment, that's a play that 30 other NFL teams probably make too, right? I just think that it's not that outrageous of a play. And I think a lot of people, of course, what ends up happening is on 2nd and 10, they gain 7 yards. And then on 3rd and 3, Perry on the Packers defense ends up knocking the ball down. So the Cowboys are forced to attempt a game tying field goal, which they do convert, but they leave Aaron Rodgers famously, you know, what, 30 some seconds left on the clock, or, yep, you know, so too much for Aaron Rodgers. But the point that we're trying to make is that because it didn't work out for the Cowboys, because the Cowboys were robbed in essence of an opportunity to go for the win, let's say right there in the final 40 seconds, I think we're focusing a lot, but the Twitterverse was abuzz at what a horrible decision that was for the Cowboys. And my viewpoint is just that we're focusing too much on the outcome rather than the process. And the fact that it didn't work out for the Cowboys, we're doing a lot of armchair quarterbacking, a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking, as they say. And even I at that moment thought, well, that's strange. I just think it wasn't the most egregious football error in the world. You know, Dave, this was not Pete Carroll throwing the ball at the 1 yard line against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Let's put it that way.
Let me focus on the outcome for a few moments again, Gil. Later on in the series, you mentioned it there, Gil, 3rd and 3, you've got the best running back in the NFL this season anyway in the backfield, Ezekiel Elliott. Why not run on 3rd and 3? Then if you don't convert, at least Green Bay to stop the clock have to use one of their timeouts rather than throwing the ball and stopping the clock, not completing the pass, and then allowing Aaron Rodgers that 30 seconds or so to march his team down the field. Why not run there on 3rd down? That was one other call that I thought maybe more egregious than Dak Prescott spiking the ball.
I would agree with you, and I think even broader than that, my biggest problem with the Cowboys strategically in that game was that I felt they abandoned Ezekiel Elliott way too early in that game. Even when they were down 14-3, even when they were down 21-3, and I know they made it 21-10 quick, so it didn't look like on the scoreboard they had abandoned him at that point. But they went back to Ezekiel Elliott early in the second half, which sort of proved my point. If you look back at the stats, they never went to Ezekiel Elliott on 3rd and short in that game. They never went to him in the red zone. I guess, and I'll wrap this up quickly, but I think what I like to say as a bettor is that the truth serum is always when you're betting. Like, people can speculate when they don't have money on the line, but when you have money on the line, there's no denying the truth. And as a Green Bay bettor last week, every time the Cowboys did not go to Ezekiel Elliott was a small victory for me as a Packers bettor. I just was like, great, thank you, because he could get 4 or 5 yards every time he touched the ball. So even when they were down, I know people are like, well, they were down 14-3. You can't run the ball. Yes, you can. It was in the first half. They caught up anyway. I really do think that was the strategic error. And your play that you're referring to, I think that was a more egregious error than the spike itself.
Packers at the Falcons then in the conference championship, Gil. The Packers 19-10, the Falcons 10-23. This spread is set at 5.5. And clearly, everyone expects a shootout here, Gil.
Well, I think rightfully so, right? This spread at 60.5, as you mentioned, is the highest in a playoff game since 1986, 31 years, Dave, since we've had a playoff game with this high of a total. And someone said this is the second highest for any game behind the 2000 game between the Rams and the 49ers, which was 62. I mean, this is crazy high. And the interesting thing about spreads this high is that, you know, when something is at extremes, somehow it tends to, you know, you think, oh, under's got to be the play. I don't know. I don't know how either of these two defenses stop the opposing offenses. You have in Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan. I mean, listen, for the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, and we've already talked about what he did at the end of this last game, Packers have won 8 games in a row. During that 8-game winning streak, Dave, the Falcons have played 7 games in that same span. They had a bye when we stretch it back to the regular season. But you look at the stats, Matt Ryan has not only matched Aaron Rodgers pass for pass, he bests him in many categories: completion percentage, yards per attempt over that span, passer rating, QBR, pick your metric. Matt Ryan has been awesome. In fact, Matt Ryan this year, 9.3 yards per attempt, the most in NFL history for anyone with 500 attempts. But of course, the big question in this game and part of our handicap in this game is the fact that no Jordy Nelson probably. Davante Adams is banged up for the Packers. So once again, Aaron Rodgers and his brilliance forced to navigate through a game without all of his weapons. And then in Atlanta's case, what we really don't know is how much does that toe injury, how much is that going to hamper Julio Jones? And I think that's a monster question that none of us are truly qualified to answer at this point.
Because the Atlanta offense last week as well, we talked about the Packers taking down the Cowboys in the end. Atlanta were dominant against the Seattle Seahawks, historically a top-class defense, Gil, and the Falcons went to work and won that game comprehensively. So if the Falcons are in tip-top shape and Julio Jones is in tip-top shape, The Falcons are going to be difficult to stop here. That Packers defense doesn't look like it's going to be able to stop the Falcons. And I thought Julio Jones working on Richard Sherman last week was a joy to behold, really, Gil, as well.
I mean, I'm with you. I really thought the Seahawks would fare better, but tip of the cap, as we say in baseball terms, tip of the cap to the Atlanta Falcons. That offense is just multidimensional. It's just fabulous. I've been saying on my show, as much as you can say this about any game where you're like, well, the team that really gets out to a lead, they're going to be in really great shape. You can sort of blanket that with any game, right? But I think in this game in particular, it is meaningful because with the Falcons, it's such a multidimensional offense, right? It's the opposite of the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, Eddie Lacy and James Starks are distant memories, right? They had to convert Ty Montgomery from wideout to be an effective running back. So they're a much more one-dimensional team. No one's going to be fooled by the fact that Aaron Rodgers is going to run the show and it's going to be through the air. But with the Falcons, as much as we talk about Le'Veon Bell for the Steelers, and we will momentarily, Le'Veon Bell has just been spectacular. But if you look at the stats since week four, since Le'Veon Bell got in the lineup for the Steelers, this two-headed monster for the Falcons in the backfield of Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman has been every bit as productive when you break down the stats. In fact, they eclipse the stats of Le'Veon Bell by just a touch. So imagine having that with that passing game with Julio Jones. It is a big task for any defense to face, let alone one as, suspect as the Packers have been.
Where do you stand on this spread, Gil?
It's one of those games, Dave, I'll be honest with you. I mean, look, let's just take it to the money, first of all, in Vegas and offshore. This line opened, and Atlanta got about a third of the money, and they got about a third of the spread tickets, and yet there was reverse line movement. The line still climbed a little, and it went up to about -5, -5.5. Now it's kind of settled back in. The public loves the Packers. They love Aaron Rodgers. So right now you're seeing some combination of -4.5, -5, depending on where you look. Will Hill has it at what right now?
We've got it at 5.5, Gil, right now.
5.5. So it's creeping back. So, as much as the thrust of Green Bay tickets and Green Bay money is, that's public money. So if you're talking about sharp bettors, casually calling them sharp bettors versus public bettors, this is all about the Falcons. For me, this is one of those games where if this was a typical Sunday afternoon in the season, I would stay away from this game. I have much stronger conviction in the next game. This is one of those games where I really do respect Atlanta, and I think they're probably the better football team. But I said before last week, if the Packers beat the Cowboys, how do we consider in our heads, forget what the actual spreads are going to be, because the Packers will be dogs against the Falcons, they'll be dogs if they have to play the Patriots, whatever. But how do we bet against Aaron Rodgers anymore? How do we do that as human beings? So for me, this spread is right where it ought to be. I'm more focused on that total, and every instinct in me says to take the under, and I just want to take a big gulp and just squint my eyes and endure.
I think I'm the same way. I think under 60.5 points and just hope that one of the two offenses isn't quite firing on the night, and maybe perhaps the wide receiver issues on both sides of the ball, Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson and Julio Jones for the Falcons, they just rear their heads slightly, and neither offense or one of the two offenses isn't quite as dynamic, and that unders ends up landing, because 60 is a lot of points, Gil.
It's a lot of points, and I think you say it well. It's sort of like, I guess it's analogous to an NBA game. That total is set at, let's say 227 or 228, like some ridiculously high NBA game. And if you bet the under on something like that, all you're really hoping for is one somewhat protracted dry spell in the middle of the game. It doesn't even have to be that protracted. Just one stretch where the teams miss shots, right?
Yeah.
And so this is the football equivalent of that. Just give me one stretch where they're not scoring touchdowns, and you ought to be able to hit the under. Now, famous last words, right? Right, Dave? This is going to be at 40 by halftime, and we'll all look stupid. But that's my instinct on this game.
One final word on Aaron Rodgers. I know we've talked about him in detail in this preview, Gil. But that hit by Jeff Heath would have caused, I think, 95% of the quarterbacks in the league to fumble there. not only did Aaron Rodgers not fumble, he held the ball with one hand, popped up and called a timeout within seconds. It was just, he is superhuman.
It's a great point. We haven't really lingered on that so much as we have on the spike afterwards. But what you're referring to, for those who are confused, is the play right before the 3rd-and-20 conversion where Rodgers literally drew the patterns that his receivers should run on that final play. And he ends up rolling out to his left and, of course, famously hitting Jared Cook as Jared Cook's falling out of bounds, setting up the winning field goal for Mason Crosby, which, you know, was the worst golf shot you'll ever see, but somehow managed to land right where it needed. But the play before that is the corner blitz, and Rodgers just got pounded from behind, didn't know it was coming, and you are 100% right. Who the hell holds on to that football but Aaron Rodgers? I don't know how he did. And the presence of mind, like you said, to pop right up and call the timeout to give the Packers the opportunity to make the next play and the subsequent field goal. I mean, greatness. It's like I said at the top, Dave, just send that video into the people at the Hall of Fame right now, because that's going in. When you talk about his great games, when we look back at his career, we will not be able to ignore that performance.
Let's talk about the AFC Conference Championship between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots. The Steelers at the Patriots for this matchup. And the Steelers are 11-5 on the money line. The Patriots are 5-13. The spread is set at 6 currently. The Steelers plus 6 at 10-11. The Patriots minus 6 at 10-11. Last week, the Steelers beat the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, 18-16, despite failing to score a touchdown in that match, while the Patriots eventually took care of the Texans. Having said that, Gil, the Texans with, I think, an average quarterback under center would have been a lot closer to the Patriots. The defense eventually ended up getting worn out, but that unit is superb, Gil, the Texans defense, and they gave Tom Brady something to think about last week, but couldn't get anything going on offense with Brock Osweiler in the center.
It was really amazing, exactly what you said. You know, there was no point in that game, certainly not in the first half and some point in the second half, where you thought to yourself, man, New England, they're going to cover this. I mean, you were thinking the opposite. You were almost like, man, Houston might have a shot here. And, you know, up to the point where Brock Osweiler threw a beautiful pass, to Brock Osweiler's credit, threw a beautiful pass deep to Will Fuller, and Will Fuller just flat out dropped it, which really could have made a game of it. That's when you sort of knew, okay, well, there's going to be no drama in terms of who wins this. But the fact that New England ended up covering that 17-point spread, what ended up being a 17-point spread by winning 34-16, just amazing, and crushed all the books. So no sympathy for sports books. But you're right. What Houston did was show that the Patriots are susceptible. And look, the Patriots, when you look up and down their schedule, Dave, and this is the most important thing, as great as they've been, you know, competition matters. And this team, while, listen, I understand by beating all their opponents, they by themselves are also diminishing the records of the teams that they have faced, right? So it's part and parcel. I get it. But if you look back at all the teams they've played, Dave, they've played no one like they're about to play this weekend in the Steelers.
And that's what you've been saying for weeks on this podcast, that the Patriots are susceptible, are vulnerable. Are the Steelers the team to take advantage of the Patriots and their deficiencies?
Yes, they are. And they're getting 6 points here? I mean, that's crazy to me. I'm all over the Steelers against the spread, and I even think the Steelers have a legit shot at winning this football game. Now, again, as I say that, if the Patriots come out and win by 2 touchdowns, it's just ridiculous. And then you're going to have the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and everybody who's a Patriots hater is just going to be so disappointed. But I really do think the Steelers, of all teams, you know, I do think Kansas City had a makeup where they could beat the Patriots as well. But as long as you've got Big Ben Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell in that offense and a really rejuvenated defense, and we can get into what the Steelers defense has been doing, I think this is the team that Belichick fears the most. I really do. I think if he was having a game plan for Alex Smith, I think he and Tom Brady behind closed doors would be like, all right, let's get this done. But I really think they're on high alert this week. They know that this is a veteran quarterback who's already a Super Bowl champion. You have a team that arguably has the best wide receiver and the best running back in the NFL. And look what Le'Veon Bell's doing, that patient running style where he waits behind the offensive line. That is job number one for the Patriots defense. How do we stop Le'Veon Bell? If they can't do that, they're going down.
They have won 9 consecutive games now, the Pittsburgh Steelers, since losing out to the Dallas Cowboys back on the 13th of November. That was a 35-30 loss. They were beaten by the New England Patriots in Week 7 at Heinz Field as well, 27-16. Brady on that occasion was 19 of 26 for 222 yards and 2 touchdowns. Just before you go on to talk about the Steelers and their improving defense skill, is Ben Roethlisberger's form or lack of form in the second half of the season a concern for you, Gil, or do you think he turns it on for this matchup?
It is a concern because he hasn't been vintage Big Ben. I'll definitely give you that. And, I mean, really, we haven't. Listen, they didn't get in the end zone against the Chiefs. The fact that they only scored 6 field goals and won that game, you know, they converted 6 field goals and won it, is just a feat in and of itself. But even before last week, we were saying on the show and on mine, you know, Big Ben has just not looked sharp. There's something, even in the win against the Dolphins, he had a lot of, you know, just bad passes, picks. So it is a concern. But, you know, look, these 4 quarterbacks, and people should know just for context, we are headed into a championship round with the 4 best quarterbacks ever compiled in any championship round, arguably. 27 Pro Bowls among them, 10 conference championships, 7 Super Bowl titles. Now, I know Matt Ryan of the Falcons doesn't have anything to do with the conference championships or Super Bowl titles. He's trying to change that both this week and next. But Big Ben's a big part of that stuff. Big Ben is headed to the Hall of Fame himself, you know, lest we forget that this is a league of only Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. So Big Ben, I think, shows up for this. He certainly has the weapons, and that Patriots defense, if they can't stop Bell, it opens up things for Big Ben. I don't think you could hand pick a team in the league that you'd want to play the Patriots more than you would the Steelers right now.
Talk about that defense then, Gil, because it has improved over the last few weeks, the Steelers defense. We saw last week the Texans managing to pressurize Tom Brady. That's something that the Steelers will be working on this week. They'll be thinking, we've got to get pressure on Tom Brady, unsettle him, and that's going to be the key to victory for the Steelers.
Yeah, I think it begins and ends there, right? Like, for all we talk about Big Ben and Le'Veon and Antonio Brown, and justifiably so, right? They're awesome, especially those two skill players, the wideout and the back, Brown and Bell. But it really does come down to, how do you stop Tom Brady, perhaps the greatest of all time? And Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus of the Texans, as you pointed out, really did a great job doing that with interior pass rush. Well, since week 14, so as much as we focus on the Steelers offense, since week 14, really the Steelers' success in this 9-game winning streak has really been about their defensive change. It was a very pedestrian defense before that, but since week 14, they put in the second-year linebacker, Bud Dupree, into the starting lineup. And if you recall, remember when Matt Moore of the Dolphins just got murdered on the field?
Yeah.
That was Bud Dupree who hit Matt Moore. Last week, the guy who hit Alex Smith, caused Alex Smith to throw up a duck in the air, was picked off by Ryan Shazier when the Chiefs were driving. The hit on Smith, that was Bud Dupree. Bud Dupree, since week 14, has spearheaded a Steelers defense that has really terrorized opposing quarterbacks. 7.8% sack rate, that's the 5th highest rate in the league over that time frame. And it's the best sack rate of the 4 remaining playoff teams, by the way, over that span, by a comfortable margin. The Falcons, Patriots, and Packers all below league average, coming in between 5 and 5.5% over that span. But Bud Dupree himself, since week 14, and keep in mind that's the last month of the regular season and these 2 playoff games, 6 ball games, but 6 games, 5 sacks, 8 quarterback knockdowns over this 6-game span. And really the game changer. It's amazing what one player's insertion into your defense can do to change everything around. He was a first-round pick last year in 2015. He didn't really do much. And then, as I mentioned, first 9 games this year, he was out with a you know, recovering from groin surgery in the offseason. But now he's finally the guy they drafted. And like you said, if the Steelers are going to win this game, it's going to be in large part because Dupree and that defense exert pressure on Brady. So he's a huge key in this game.
The Steelers plus six are the bets for Gil. 10-11, the Steelers plus six on the spread. Final question, Gil. Super Bowl 51, Sunday the 5th of February from the NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas. Who gets there?
Boy, gun to head. You ready for this?
Yep.
I'm going with Pittsburgh and Atlanta.
Pittsburgh and Atlanta.
I'm stepping out on a limb because I know everyone's like, you're going against the Patriots? That's stupid. I really do believe, as much as I want to see Aaron Rodgers and the Packers extend their winning streak and extend their amazing run, my gut tells me that this is where that streak ends for the Packers. But I'll be rooting for the Packers for sure. But I really think the Steelers topple the Patriots. I think this is a very susceptible football team. You know, if you look at the Patriots season, I'll say this briefly. Not only do I think they played an easy schedule, but then it's just sort of this three-game thing that Belichick has to navigate, right? So he gets a bye. So he gets 2 weeks to prepare for whoever his first opponent was. And just by luck, they happen to get the Texans, obviously a flawed football team, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. Then he essentially just has to get through one game to get another two-week break to play whoever he plays in the NFC. So this is the big bump in the road. This is the one shot. You know, we have really, I'm acting like I'm like Mr. Anti-Patriots, but this is really the worst situation for the Patriots all year. And I think they are frantically trying to prepare for the Steelers football team. The Steelers are built to win. So I'm going Steelers and Falcons. That's my prediction.
Gil, you're talking about the Packers as well and how you're rooting for the Green Bay Packers. If you're a neutral in this situation, I think it's hard to root against the Packers because there's something endearing about Aaron Rodgers' arrogance. It sounds strange, but there's something endearing about him saying, this is what we're going to do, and then actually doing it that makes you want them to succeed.
Yeah, and I think we realize, all of us do, and if we don't, I don't know what we think we're watching, but we're watching greatness, right? That we're watching something so special. And that's no knock on Matt Ryan, right? Matt Ryan's had a decent enough career. And even if Matt Ryan goes on and wins the Super Bowl for the Falcons this year, great for Matt Ryan. But in essence, he's Joe Flacco at that point, right? He's had one great Super Bowl run. He had, you know, a nice, decent career, but he's older. And Matt Ryan's never in the same sentence as Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is just one of the all-time greats. The fact that he came in after Brett Favre and has exceeded what Brett Favre has done. Now, they both have won one Super Bowl, so certainly on that ledger, they're even. But the body of work at this point is just, you just marvel. We realize we're watching greatness. So, yes, he's very hard to root against. As a neutral observer, I don't see how you do that. And to do it year after year now, Dave, without his complement of weapons, that's the other thing. You know, when he won the Super Bowl, when the Packers won the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, they had the most games lost to injury of any team in the NFL that season. I don't know if people remember, but JerMichael Finley was hurt. They had all kinds of people hurt that year as well. Well, we may be watching part deux of that this year if they are to win it all, because this is incredible. You know, one stretch you don't have Randall Cobb. Next stretch you don't have Jordy. I don't know what Devontae Adams' story is. But no running backs. God's sakes, that's the biggest thing, right? We don't even think about Eddie Lacy anymore or James Starks. So we're watching greatness. Let's enjoy it. How can we not?
Thank you, Gil. Enjoy these conference championship matches. It's always a pleasure to speak to you on this podcast, Gil.
Dave, I love doing it. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. And people should know, you know, I never say this about you in front of your audience, but people should know how knowledgeable you are about American football. That is no small feat to be able to do that about a sport that is not, you know, one of the ones that you necessarily were exposed to first as a child. So people should know Dave Kellner's a gem.
Thank you, Gil. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Lee's docking my status in his eyes right now by saying that.
Definitely, without doubt. Without doubt, our Lee Phelps is he will be on to you after this podcast, Gil, undoubtedly. thank you for your company, Gil. Do check out Gil's podcast as well. The Megapod is out now. Check that out at Beating the Book. So that podcast. Rufus Peabody is the guest on the podcast this week with the usual staples, Gil.
Yes, sir. Rufus Peabody. No more successful American better than him.
Do check that podcast out at Beating the Book. Check out all the lines ahead of the NFL this weekend by going to sports.williamhill.com and clicking on the American football page. If you're having a bet on the conference championships, good luck. And myself and Gil will be back in 2 weeks' time to preview Super Bowl 51 in Houston. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back soon.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.